Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you with us. I'm Ryan Balaji. Trip Davis is our guest, golf course architect. We've had him on the show before. He's down in Athens, Georgia, working on a new project called The Rose. So, Trip, thanks for being here with us. We were talking before we started recording. You're shaping greens. It's hotter than heck down in Georgia, down in the south this time of year. So it's basically like bringing the beach to you because of the sand cap greens. Can you talk about where this project in particular, kind of what brought you to it and where you're at with it?
Well, I grew up in Georgia. I ended up going to play college golf at Oklahoma and met my wife there. And we're still in Oklahoma. Live at Oak Tree, actually, one of the clubs out there. And but I was hired to redo the Atlanta Athletic Club, the Riverside course, and reconnected with an old friend named Nick Cassini. And Nick was a Walker Cup player, I think in 2001. And he and I played in the final round of the Porter Cup in probably 01. He shot 64 and won. I think I may have struggled in with 71 or two, and still had a good week. But it was so. In any event, he and I kept in touch a bit, and then when we were doing Atlanta Athletic Club, we got to play some together. And he called one day and said, "Hey, my brother and I are looking at doing a project." And they had been in the real estate business, and so we went and looked at a couple of properties and weren't all that great. And he came back and said, "We've got a third one. I'm going to send you the topo maps." And I just looked over the topo maps and said, "This is amazing." And, you know, he went out and walked the site, and it's just, it's an incredible piece of property, you know, about 10 miles north of Athens. And so that's basically how we got involved.
So what stands out when you're looking at a topo map or you're at ground level? What are you trying to assess at a property that makes it exciting for you as an architect and as a golfer for that matter?
Well, the most exciting properties that you can find, especially inland, obviously if you're over near the water, it's not going to be as much roll and contour. But you know, on an inland site, especially in the south, this site's a little sandy and big trees, and we're looking for something that's interesting that rolls enough but not too much, because you don't want to have to move a whole lot of dirt. It makes it better if the holes look like they've been there, and some natural features. You know, there's a creek that runs through the property that we were able to incorporate in some ways, and just, you know, really when you were looking at the way that the ground moved, you could see these natural swales that were already in the ground where holes would tend to go. And then when we get out and walk the property, you could start to see, you know, these vistas. And this site had been timbered for pine in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the bigger trees were gone, and it was a fairly open site. There was a lot of undergrowth since then that made it kind of fun to walk through. Briars and everything else. But when I did my first routing, we were looking at the clubhouse being on this ridge, and I was having trouble getting holes back to that ridge. And, you know, and I called Nick and his brother Dimitri and said, let me move the clubhouse because I think the golf course is just going to lay in there if that's where the clubhouse ends up being. And that's what happened. And it's almost want to put a note on the front door, Ryan, when we get finished with the project and say, we didn't move as much dirt as you think we did. Because the holes just sat in there, but there's some places where, like the 11th green, there was a knoll up there, and we put the green on this knoll. Had moved very little dirt at all to even shape the green in there, and the fairway, there's a the next ridge over is where the top of that fairway is. It rolls down into one of the creeks I was talking about. And then you're just playing back up to this knoll, and one of my favorite types of holes because the further off the tee you hit it, the less you see of the green, the less you can feel wind because the green's up there on the knoll, and it, just a lot of that stuff came about.
Are there things, taking the clubhouse story to another question, are there things that the average person, I'm sure, even the person buying the land, envisioning it, bringing you in, how much of the stuff that they don't think about, like clubhouse location, like groundwater access, soil makeup, stuff like that, how much of that stuff does not get thought of when the acquisition, the property happens, and then you come in and go, we either have a problem or we got something we've got to change or, things along those lines.
Well, one of the first questions you have to ask on a new course project is, do we have water? And wherever that comes from, if it's in Phoenix, we did a project there where the water was coming from an effluent plant. Is there a big river or creek we can pull from, or whatever it may be? And so that was the first question here, and they had someone come out and do some investigation into the wells that were local and so forth, and that worked out, and it's worked out fine. We've one of the things, because of the way the site is built, we were able to put the irrigation lake in a position where it catches about 80% of the runoff from the golf course, and so we can basically divert. Anytime irrigation goes on, it goes into a drain basin. What doesn't get into the turf, what ends up in a drain basin, ends up back in the lake, most of it. And so that was part of that as well. Soils are another factor. And one of the things I learned on this job is don't necessarily always trust your soil borings because, we had 10 done across the site. And there might be that many different soil types on this property because
Wow.
you can have that Georgia red clay is pretty predominant. But then when you get below that, we've hit pockets of pure sand. We've hit pockets of a quartzite sand. We've hit sandstone. And then you go a little further and you hit more sand. It's just it's kind of interesting that way. So soil investigation is important for a couple of reasons. One, how well is the site going to drain through the ground? And then, secondly, what are you going to grow grass on? And it can it be consistent across the site? So water and soils are important.
What's the typical kind of breakdown of soil across a property? Is it what kind of variety do you typically expect? Because 10 sounds like a lot. So what's kind of the normal?
Now you'll normally, on what you're working on anyway, you'll normally find maybe two or three. I mean, your typical site is going to have generally the same type of soil over 200 acres. It's not going to, in this case, 300 acres. It's not going to really vary too much across the top. Obviously, when you get down into the bottom part of a property, it's going to be a little different from the top, generally because of runoff. But that can vary. Like Augusta Country Club, for example, is not very far from here, and down in the bottom it's all clay, and you go up top and it's all sand, and so which actually leads to another issue, which is called groundwater.
Yep.
And when water gets into that sand and it hits a clay layer, it hits a rock layer, it'll move sideways and just right out the side of the hill, and it does that at Augusta Country Club in a few spots. But and we've had a little bit of that here, but nothing significant. So, You generally don't have to worry too much about it, but I think the biggest thing to do is do those soil bearings, and if you see anything unusual, you might want to keep going. Look around, see what you're going to run into. Do some test pits is even a good idea. But it's worked out here. We were able to just manage the soils and work things around to where we have a very consistent top soil layer basically, and but the site drains incredibly well. We got a 3/4 of an inch of rain the night before last, and the next morning it was a little muddy. By the next afternoon, it was dry.
Is the mitigation of trying to kind of work with all these different soil types just kind of sand capping? Is it different ways of picking different grasses? Is it rerouting holes? What's kind of the recipe playbook?
Well, it depends. When you're doing a new course, an extreme situation may result in a rerouting of some sort. Even on some renovations, you may run into a situation where a change, whether it's a complete reroute or it's moving tees and greens around a bit, might have an impact. But the drainage of a golf course is really made up of three things. One is surface drainage. If you don't have good surface drainage, then you better have good soils. And I mean, soils that will move water through. And then the other part of that with most golf courses is going to be pipe drainage, whether it's a solid pipe connected to drain basins or we put in perf pipe to collect things. Soil is the hardest to overcome because if your soils are holding water and there's not really much place for it to go beneath that, you may end up having to mitigate the soil by sand capping.
Okay.
And depending on grass types, like for instance, if you're dead set on using zoysia, there's a pretty good chance you're going to have to sand cap because you need more consistency in the amount of water holding versus Bermuda, for example.
Are there other economic decisions that go into the grass choice, Zoysia, Bermuda, t take your strain to Bermuda, whatever that is? Are there economic decisions that go into that? Is it just kind of preferential? I mean, how does that kind of tend to shake itself out?
Well, and how you grass too. I mean, for instance, if you're dead set on Zoysia fairways, you're going to sod it because it doesn't work out very well to sprig, although it has been done successfully in some cases. And there's a pretty good chance, unless your soils are relatively porous and you've got good surface slope, you're probably sand capping with Zoysia. There's a good chance of that. And so, that's a significant uptick from if you had a fairway, you had a site where you didn't need to sand cap and you could sprig zoysia. Sod to sprig is actually the preferred method these days, where versus just straight sprig. But there's anywhere from, I mean, there's as much as a $2 million difference in those two methods. And so that's definitely a financial consideration, but it also just depends on return on investment. What are you getting out of that? What does it do for play, the membership? What type of golf course are you building, and so forth. And so there's instances where the objectives may outweigh the financial concern as long as that there is that return on investment.
I mean, for your personal perspective, from the person who has to implement it, do you have a preference on grass type either way? Well, I mean, that really seems to be the main potential conversation is Zoysia versus Bermuda, but I mean, maybe there are others I'm not thinking about, maybe bent versus bluegrass or something like that.
It really depends on the type of project we're doing. I mean, it's hard to beat a really good Xeon, Zoro, Stadium Zoysia, whatever you want to choose in terms of the newer, finer bladed Zoysias. That's an unbelievable playing surface. In some parts of the world, like Dallas, for example, you're going to have good playing conditions 12 months out of the year. Even when Zoysia is dormant, it's still a pretty good playing surface. Some of the newer Bermudas that are staying greener longer, growing a little bit longer, the winter conditions are good as well. But part of it also has to do, going back to the type of play. Like if you're going to have events, Zoysia is a lot more fun to play from. It's maybe not seen as the greatest test of the game because, I mean, that ball's just sitting right up
Just
there.
it's up.
Yeah, I mean, the tour players, and there's some tour players involved here at the Rose, they don't want to play on Zoysia because it gives you a pretty good false sense of the way you're playing to some extent. But it's a great surface to play on, and it has a lot of benefits from year-round playability. But your grass selection has a lot to do with the type of play you want to have. And obviously it's climatic. I mean, if you get up into the northeast, we're doing predominantly bent grass. It might be a bent grass rye. You might do some bluegrass. I did a golf course in Colorado 22 years ago that was bluegrass and played great. Wouldn't have been any better than the bent grass is a little tighter, but the bluegrasses are a little more Zoysia-like. The ball sits up a little more, but it all depends on the type of play.
What are they looking for here at the Rose? What are their ultimate end goals as a facility? And to that end, also, well, I'll ask the follow-up after that. What's kind of the Rose's main goal here in terms of what they want their profile to be of their play?
Well, there will be some interest in doing tournaments. What type of tournaments will be to be determined. I mean, Athens, Georgia is a great little college town. It's not even really that little anymore. I mean, it's a great college town, and in terms of the type of events that it could attract, who's to say? I mean, it's having played a fair number of U.S. mid-ams and that kind of stuff. I mean, it would be, Athens would be a great place to have a mid-am, for example. Athens Country Club is a very good course. If you wanted to have a U.S. amateur, you've got a good companion course here locally. So it just depends. But the overall intent really was to make this a golf course that can be capable of hosting events. University of Georgia golf team is outstanding, and this isn't directly affiliated with the school, but Nick played at Georgia, and so there's a lot of Georgia alumni that are involved, both on the golf team and just the guys that just went to school here and ended up doing well for themselves. So, we always mention we want firm and fast. And I've tried to get them to understand you want firm, be careful with fast. especially on this side, because we have some roll and the firm nature is what we're looking for. Fast is what we can do because we are using Tiff Tough Bermuda everywhere. We're going to use Tahoma around the greens. And the greens are going to be Tiff Eagle Bermuda. So it can be set up to be fun to play every week, every day, or we can really ratchet it up and make it a very challenging test.
Yeah, I think fast is a fit. Firm is a feel. Fast is a fit. I feel like that.
That's a great way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
The secondary question I was going to ask is, it seems increasingly more, especially with the newer built facilities, but even to a degree with renovations, restorations, facilities want to think about when they're putting shovels in the ground. Secondary stuff to the main attraction, whether that's a short course, whether that's a practice facility, whatever that is. What are the folks of the Rose thinking in terms of kind of that other extra golf stuff? And then how did you have to work around that?
Good question. I mean, the practice facilities were a really important part of the thinking here, because there will be a fair number of good players that are members. It's kind of I don't know how many members are actually going to live in Athens, but it's going to be a place where you can kind of come get away, and practice is definitely and intended to be a big part of that. So the driving range location and how we fit that into the clubhouse location, Was actually one of the benefits of moving the clubhouse, like I mentioned earlier, was the ability to get that in there. There is talk of doing a short course or a par three course, and to Nick and Dimitri's credit, they're not really concerned with where it is as long as it's a good fit on the property. The location that we've looked at so far might be, because they have 600 acres total,
Oh, wow. Okay.
and so it might be out actually towards the 13th tee, or I mean, excuse me, 13th green, 14th tee, and so we didn't have to really work around those, but that's not uncommon to have to do some things that kind of fit those in. But in this case, we've got enough land where we didn't have to really compromise anything in the golf course.
Have you been getting requests from any of your work for things that maybe you weren't getting requests for, I don't know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, because of kind of these golf adjacent sites or golfish sites aren't necessarily the main focus of your work?
Not completely out of the realm of what we would have done anyway.
Okay.
It's an expansion upon those things. I mean, we've the short courses and the part, I'll call them short courses, different from a par three. The little we used to call them pitch and putts.
Yeah,
Just three or four holes
executive
like that.
courses, pitch and putts.
Yeah, and we're definitely getting requests to do a lot of that. Almost, most every client we have right now that I can think of has got ideas of doing one.
And is that for you? Is that a creative expression outlet for you to kind of try some things, or is it, because I feel like the accepted practice about a short course now is you can kind of make the greens a little crazy. You can do some retro holes. You can do tribute hole. I mean, it's just kind of a blank palette.
I'll be honest, it took me a little time to realize that. I did a couple where they're pretty basic
Yeah.
and they're serving their purpose and they're, fun to play and so forth. But we just did one at Spring Lake Golf Club up in New Jersey. And it's just a little, it's really a, they want to call it a short game facility just because some of the members don't understand the short course concept and so forth. But we did get a little bit outside the box there, and I'm helping a friend with a par three course right now where we would get outside the box a little bit, and I think some of the things that have been done, like the bad little nine that's out in
Scottsdale.
Scottsdale, those kind of help push things along. It shows what's possible. And I think, it encourages everyone, inspires everyone to think a little more outside the box with those facilities, because not only can they be more interesting and fun to play aesthetically, they can become really good parts of a facility.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I feel like, and this is just personal experience, I think maybe this isn't universally true, but people don't feel as bad hitting to an outrageous green when they've got a wedge in hand. And they
Right.
almost kind of expect, hey, something wild could happen here, good or bad, but I'm willing to accept that versus an 18-hole course.
Right. And I think there's that's what makes it a little more fun. If it's frankly, if it's just four or five or six holes of greens that are relatively simple, it's still fun, but it's not as it might not be as fun a ride as something with a little more, like for instance, hitting to a section of a green that's 200, 300 square feet,
Yeah.
and then it falls off 3 feet this way, so I think that's one of the ways in which we, make the game more fun. And I'm glad that that got introduced into the vernacular of what we can do with those facilities.
Well, Tripp, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. You're always very busy, but you're always very gracious with your time, and you always have really cool things that you're working on. You're kind of do the breadth of everything, which makes it really fun to kind of talk about all this stuff, kind of get a state of play from you. What else are you working on? How many sites are you working on right now currently? And then what have you got kind of coming up maybe in the next year or so?
So we really only try to do, I'd love to do one at a time, but two at a time usually ends up being the case because of schedules and so forth. And but that's about all we really want to try to do. And so we just finished a restoration of an old John Breedemus course in San Angelo, Texas, which is I went on the way out there. I was like, this is going to be flat. And I didn't, I'd already kind of talked myself out of being interested in it. And I got out there and I was like, wow. And the green complexes that Breedemus had done, and 14 of them were still original. So we just finished that. That was a lot of fun. We're doing the South Course at Ridgely in Fort Worth. It's a redo that starts in November. And then we're actually out until 28 now. We've been hired to do Turtle Creek Club in Jupiter, Florida,
Awesome.
rebuilt there. And that'll be a lot of fun. There's a lot of good players that are members there. A lot of guys I played amateur golf and mid amateur golf with that are members there. And so that's going to be a lot of fun as well. But we're really just trying to do one, two at a time, and really pour our hearts and soul into everything. And so it's a lot more fun that way than spending all your time on an airplane. Because one of the things a lot of people don't realize or forget, if they will, is if you're doing five or six or seven projects at a time, you've got to build the infrastructure to be able to do that within your company. And
Yeah.
so that means you got to go find five or six or seven more for the next year, the next year, and the next year, and you spend all your time on an airplane. And I like getting on a Sand Pro and sweating our ear off, and having fun making all the details good. So we're in a good spot and really fortunate and blessed that we have a lot of interest in working with us. So we're having a lot of fun.
Well, good. Keep crushing it. We appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care, Ryan.
Warning: the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ziprecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ziprecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ziprecruiter.com/zip.